things go up, things go down, but getting the number side of things right is super important. Like, you know, the sake of a few percent here or there can alter the final result of the business in a big way.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. What sort of impact on a career in food does growing up in a family and culture where the dining table is the hub of family activity, shared meals, debates, discussions, and social interactions while breaking bread? Does it create a different kind of hospitality professional? David DeLay is the co-owner and executive chef of Il Baccaro in Melbourne. David, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Good. It's great to get you on the show. How are things in Melbourne at the moment?
Things in Melbourne are pretty good. Pretty good. We just finished the Grand Prix, so I've had a pretty busy week and still following on this week, which has been nice. But overall, it's been pretty good.
What sort of impact does the Grand Prix have on sort of your day-to-day?
A lot. It brings a lot of people into Melbourne. It creates a really, really good buzz, especially in the CBD area. And I think just people like to go out and eat out and spend money, which is fantastic, which has lacked a little bit the last few months here.
You've got yourself a restaurant that's in classic Melbourne style, sort of tucked away, a little bit of a secret, but there's a bit of a powerhouse in itself. How's the restaurant going?
The restaurant's been doing really good. We've had a really good few years, especially coming out of COVID. Melbourne has been busier than ever, which has been great. But for the last sort of 6 to 8 months, with a lot of the interest rate hikes and things have gone up and cost of living has gone up, everyone's felt a little bit of a hurdle pop up, and everyone's gone a little bit quieter in general.
Have you sort of changed, you know, what you do and what you deliver at Il Baccaro as a result of sort of the last couple of years?
A little. We stick to our theme, we stick to our guns, and we stick to what we know and what we do. But we do adapt with a bit of the style and at time to time, and just sort of adapt with how things go around in Melbourne, and not only that, with chefs that we have in the kitchen as well.
Tell us a little bit about the offering at Il Baccaro.
Il Baccaro, we offer more modern Italian cuisine, a little bit of influence. I've got a little bit of a strong Japanese influence now because my current head chef is Japanese. So it's amazing how Tatsu's style can incorporate really, really well with modern Italian cuisine. I wouldn't say fusion, but like incorporating a lot of some Japanese ingredients and techniques into Italian cookery is just an amazing, amazing combination and works exceptionally well.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because it's actually not as crazy as it might sound on the surface. I know in Japan there are a lot of amazing Italian restaurants, and there are things that can be transferred. Is there some things on the menu that you could sort of share with us where Japanese and Italian sort of works together in that sense?
Yeah, using a lot of shiokoji-based ingredients and things like that works well in sauces, marinades, garnishes, and et cetera. Yeah, it's surprisingly well. It shocks me every day as well how well things work.
I want to explore what you're doing there in detail in a little while, but you grew up in an Italian family. Take us back to when you were young. What was it like for you growing up?
Yeah, when I was young, growing up in an Italian family was a bit oblivious to what I knew compared to normal Australian culture. I thought things were completely normal when we were growing tomatoes in the farm and picking them and making sauce every year and growing pigs and killing them in the winter to make salami and not really knowing any other different things. But as I got older and realizing what Australia was and people looking at knowing what we do was like fascinated and like you said, like wow, like so that, and to me I was like, well, but this is just normal. And you know, mum always cooks at home and has always been a fantastic cook, and I've always loved and still do love mum's cooking. So you know, helping her make pasta and her making gnocchi and things like tiramisu and all those things that she makes is still my favorite to this day. So seeing that and doing that was what I thought was completely normal as a child.
Tell us a little bit about your Italian heritage and some of the food dishes that are important to that.
Italian heritage, yep. As I said, it all comes back down to family and just doing traditions and things like that. And, you know, like I said, like earlier, making the sauces and doing the salami. But just Italian food in general, just knowing that using fresh produce and things that are sustainable and in season and things that are grown yourself and a lot of things taken from our backyard and put on the plate at home. And yeah, it was completely normal.
Are there any dishes that stand out from you, like that you have fond memories of from when you were young?
Yes, Mum's gnocchi. As simple as it sounded, it was so good. And I never knew how good it was until other people would, one, try it and eat it. And not only myself, and even myself, when I try other people's gnocchi, I'll go to a restaurant and have gnocchi because it's always been my favourite food. And every time you go out and order, it was, when I was younger especially, it was always disappointing. Mum's is 10 times better than his. So that will be definitely one of my fond memories for sure.
Tell us a bit about what makes a great gnocchi or how to make your mother's one.
Mum's is just made with, it's just love. It's just so, she's just so careful with everything. Like the way she boils the potatoes and mixes in the egg and mixes in the flour, and her technique is just unexplainable. It's they're just perfect every time. Every time.
When did you first sort of start to get interested in food and see it as a potential career?
The first time I started seeing it as love for food as a career, it's probably my big brother. You know, I always try to copy what my big brother did when I was a kid. And he started his apprenticeship when I was in high school, and I thought, you know what, I want to be a chef. And when I was a kid originally, I really wanted to be a car salesman. I loved cars. I still do love cars. And I remember when I was really young, I'm like, you know what, I want to be that. And I can't remember who it was, but they told me, they go, don't do that, it's a shit job. Okay, be an accountant. And I originally thought, maybe I can be an accountant. I was naturally good with numbers, and I still am really good with numbers, naturally. Maybe I can be an accountant. But then, yeah, when I saw my big brother start his apprenticeship as a chef, I thought, yep, I want to be a chef. And, yeah, it just continued on. He didn't. He stopped his apprenticeship, but I just continued and flourished.
Well, take us back to that sort of those early years. Where did you get your foot in the door, and do you have any stories from that time of what it was like?
It was tough as an apprentice back in, it was like over 20, my God, it was like nearly 25 years ago now. It was tough, you know, 70 hours a week was standard. But saying that, like where I worked was a very, very high standard place. So things were made fresh every day. And just learning the importance of working long hours and maintaining high standards and attention to detail, no matter how tired you were or how long the day was, everything was just was full on. So definitely learned a lot from that. And when I started at Il Bucro, I started towards the end of my apprenticeship, which is nearly 23 years ago now, Anthony. So a long time. And my first head chef was Jason Unovich, who was Gordon Ramsay trained back then, and very, very, very full on. But again, learned a lot of things again, like attention to detail, high standards. And after Jason was Riccardo Mimesso, who taught me a lot about Italian cookery and cooking from the heart and soul. And he was a very good chef. And also after that was Maurice Esposito. And he just came out from Stoke House then, and we're so lucky to have him to come to Il Bucro. And I was his sous chef, and I learned a lot from him, and which made me a lot as a chef and as a person today from those guys there.
Do you have any stories of what it was like to work with Riccardo?
He was fun. He was a fun chef. He was a very good chef. His food was almost too modern for the time. He was just his food was great, and it was probably, I reckon, at the best in Melbourne at the time. And, you know, this was definitely pre-Instagram and pre-social media days. So, you know, it was almost, well, like one of the best kept secrets, I think. If you dined at Buckrow with Riccardo there, your food was fantastic.
And you also mentioned Maurice. How different was he?
Very different. Maurice was he was very smart. His food was more cleaner, more smarter. Again, probably very modern for the time. But learn a lot from him. Would learn a lot more about how to run a kitchen and how to run a business as well. I think was what I learned a lot more from that side of things.
When did you first start to find your own voice on the plate? And is there any sort of dish or two from that period of time that you remember that sort of exemplified you then?
I used to love, like, braised baby goat and braised baby lamb and roasted suckling pig. So doing things with whole animals and breaking them down, which was just, I think it's still a bit of an art form because not many people do that. I still love that and I still do that and I try to encourage that as much as possible now. Still a little buck row, but, you know, using whole animals and things like that. So, yeah, I think probably, yeah, a lot of butchery, definitely.
Tell us about sort of how to cook sort of a whole beast. What's sort of important when you're going down that road?
Understanding each cut. At first, like, there's a lot of braising and just chuck everything in and braise it all together. And and some things work really, really well and some things didn't. But, yeah, I think it's important to know, you know, the whole cut and respecting every cut and knowing how what to do with it. I'm not saying you can't cook whole animals whole. Of course you can. But just making sure you understand each and every cut.
Is there a cut of the pig or lamb that sort of really stands out for you and a way that you like to cook it?
With pigs, I love the shoulder, the whole thing, suckling pigs, the shoulder, the bellies, the legs, everything. It's so succulent, so yummy. Especially, yeah, the suckling pig, it's just, every part is so good. Every part is good, literally head to tail.
You worked your way up the ranks at Il Barcaro. Tell us about the time when you sort of got the position to sort of run the kitchen and what that was like.
Yeah, that was challenging. You know, I was young, I was 25, first time head chef role. You know, I had some great chefs work with me before that. So, you know, I definitely know I learned a lot. And the owners at the time were confident that I could do it. And I was confident as well I could do it, but it was definitely a challenge. And I think the biggest challenge was being 25. You know, you try to hire some people that were in a senior role that were like a sous chef or a good CDP were probably in their early 30s. And I think it's hard. You know, some people did come on board and were great and respectful and came on board for a long time. But I remember interviewing a lot of people, I think just could straight out just tell me, say, I'm not having a 25-year-old tell me what to do. Like, and I was like, it's a bit of an eye opener, and I totally understood, and that was fine. But that was a challenge. So, you know, first time doing a lot of hours, like, you know, I think 100 hours a week for most of the times until you got used to it. And then, yeah, it just got better and better from there.
When did you sort of find your feet and felt like you had your voice on the plate, everything was sort of on song in the kitchen?
When you start building your own team, I think when you got your own team and it's not all about me, you know, it's about with what you've got. And I've always been a team person and a team-focused person. And when you've got a good team, and I think that's when everything sings nicely and your true feelings and heart and soul come out, the people around you.
You're renowned for championing Victorian produce. Do you have any stories of the connections that you've had with different producers that you use over the years?
Yes, again, Western Plains Pork. I've been using her pigs, Judy's Crow's pigs, for many, many years. She's one of the best producers out there. She's having a hard time at the moment with her suckling pigs, but it's been... Her relationship with her has been fantastic. Also, our olive oil, been using Sarah from Chapman Hill. So, been using her for many, many years, and her olive oil is just beautiful, like amazing. From something from Victoria can taste so like an Italian extra virgin olive oil. So, them two have been really, really good to work with. I'm trying to think who else from Victoria. They're definitely my two main ones. Think who else.
Tell us a little bit about your food. There's so many different regions in Italy, and given that you're in Australia as well, what sort of do you lean into in regards to dish creation and your food?
I think first and foremost, like, yes, we are Italian, and then there is many, many regions, and it's so diverse wherever you go across Italy, from the north to the south, it's completely different than ingredients and style, yeah, and what they use. But I think the most important thing is trying to just adapt to what we have in Australia and just introducing Italian methods and cuisine into with Australian produce and ingredients. I think that's probably the most best part about doing the dishes here.
Why is the relationship with the producers and that produce so important to what you do?
Knowing where everything comes from, how things have been raised, how things have been brought up, things are sustainable, knowing that animals are cared for and looked after for, I think that's really, really important, and it really, really shows from when you get the product delivered, how things have been treated and with respect and how just how everything's been, not only animals, but even fresh produce and like veggies and how things have been grown and nurtured and looked after. And you really see that when it comes through and delivered, and when you use it and pass it on to the plate, it's a big, big factor.
There was a period of time where you were the head chef, and now you're the executive chef and co-owner as well. How did that transition occur and move into an ownership?
Yeah, it was a big transition. Stepping up from head chef to exec chef, and at the time when I got stepped up, I was looking after multiple venues across the group. So that was definitely a big change. A lot more off the tools, but working with a lot more of the head chefs at the venues. So, working with my head chef at Ilbacro, working with the head chef at Carolina, and working with the head chefs at Teto. So I think the creative side got stepped back a little bit more, a lot more admin, a lot more computer work, a lot more business focus, a lot more costing focus, a lot more budgets involved. But, you're still working with people that share the same passion with you and the same love with you. So, you're still involved with creation, but just seeing these younger guys' creativity and letting them explore what they want to do is just like a real eye-opener, and you go, wow, these guys are good. and you give them a bit of freedom and let them do a bit more what they want to do, and obviously you help them and guide through the whole way. But, yeah, I think it's a real eye-opener and a bit of a change, and seeing what the young guys do now. And I remember it's an eye-opener because I remember, I was like that buzz and flair and creative you have, and like now these guys have got it. It's great.
You mentioned you've always been good with numbers, and there's the creative side and the passionate side of hospitality, but the numbers and the real foundation of a successful business as well. What sort of advice do you have about running food costs, running the business to allow that creativity?
Yeah, margins in general for a restaurant is just so tight. So, yeah, I think being good with numbers is so important. That's one thing Mum always taught me as well when I was young. She was, make sure you're good with your maths. And I was lucky I was. So, yeah, I think just knowing how much things are at the moment and just keeping an eye on things, and things go up, things go down. But, it's really important knowing that getting the number side of things right is super important. Like, the sake of a few percent here or there can alter the final result of the business in a big way.
Are there any sort of tips or advice that you can give on how to manage that sort of those costs, whether it's labor or food? Is there any sort of tricks that you have up your sleeve to get on top of that sort of stuff?
Oh, not really tricks, so to speak, but more just monitoring, just knowing how much things are and how much things are, really keeping an eye on that and making sure that things can be passed on. Like I think one of my first bosses was saying, you don't need the best apple to make apple pie. And so that was a really, really good humble advice, I think, using that. I think just using that concept was clever too.
Let's talk about your food for a little bit. Do you have a couple of dishes on the menu that sort of exemplifies your cooking and where you're at the moment?
Yes. Our signature dish is at Ilbacro. Our spaghettini with Moreton Bay bugs has been on forever. It's a classic dish. It's so good. It's so simple. It's been on since day one. It's a really, really good dish. And also our cheesecake. I think that's more of a me dish. To agave cheesecake with blueberry and creme fraiche and fairy floss and popping candy. It's very, a bit fun and childish, but very well balanced and not too sweet, but really, really yummy.
Ilbacro is a bit of a legendary venue in Melbourne. Do you feel a sense of obligation on what you need to provide or what the restaurant is?
To a degree, yes. I think our regulars know what they're coming for, and I think that's definitely something we need to provide. I think it's like our calamari is one of our classic dishes that's been on the Ilbacro for 25 years, and people absolutely love it. And it's something that's not on the menu anymore, but it's something we always have. it's here. It's always on. It's something the customers love, and it's it's something, yeah, it'll always be on the menu. It's a classic dish from the 90s. You know, it almost looks out of part with the current food that we're doing now, but, you know, it still blends in quite well. And again, just sticking to our guns and doing how we've always done it. You know, we still use fresh calamari. You know, it costs an arm and a leg these days, but we still use it. We're not changing it. So, but no, the Cuff people love it.
You mentioned a bit earlier that a year or so ago, you sort of let go of some of the your role with some of the other restaurants and focus on Il Vacaro. What sort of impact has that had on you?
Good and bad. I love doing the exec role. I loved looking after multiple venues, but it did get a little bit challenging. And I think it was at the point of time where Il Vacaro needed me more than ever to come back. You know, my interest is in Il Vacaro. I have, you know, I'm a shareholder, I'm a co-owner of Il Vacaro, but not the others. So as bad as it sounded, yeah, I think it was time to come home, really, Anthony. And No, looking back, and it's been good. And, you know, now it's about focusing and looking forward and on what's next and what we want to do next.
It certainly seems a lot different to some of the adversity of the last couple of years. How do you see the next year playing out, and what sort of plans do you have?
I think the next year or so, it's a bit hard to say. The current market and everything going on is a bit tricky. I think everyone's struggling a little bit at the moment, and the restaurants doesn't seem as busy, like as restaurants in general, sorry, not just us. I think the whole industry just seems not as busy as usual. So I think for the next year is just sort of just continue what we're doing and see what pans out. I'd love to open another place and run another place and continue to grow, but maybe not the best time right now. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, it's amazing what Il Vacaro's gifted Melbourne and so many Melbourne diners and visitors to Melbourne as well. What do you love about what you do?
What I love, every day is different. The people that I work with, my business partners, like my brother, Marco, you know, we just, every year we just get stronger and stronger. We know each other. We've known each other for years. So what I love about my job, as I said, yeah, it's just the team and the people I have around me. You know, my current head chefs, Tatsu and Jared, they're just so inspiring. You know, Tatsu's so young. You know, he was young chef of the year contender for San Pellegrino, and his inspiration and his creativity is really, really inspiring. So, yeah, I think, as I said, seeing these younger guys now is just very inspiring, and every day is different, and always learning something new all the time.
Well, David, it's an absolute honour to have you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear just a part of your story. I look forward to seeing where you take it. Il Vacaro from here. Please keep in touch, and we'll catch up again soon.
Yes, for sure. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you very much.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.